and his arms looked as if a brown bear had mated with the fuzziest carpet in the land and produced twins. I could barely see his face, for his beard started somewhere near his eyebrows and ended at a carefully trimmed point, several inches away from his chin, at the center of his chest. He wore a thick, knee-length jacket made of bright silver silk, and several gold rings bearing different cuts of diamonds on his fingers. His curly hair was pulled back from his face in a long ponytail, and his right ear was pierced with a crystal stud. In contrast, his heart's glass was unadorned and purple-hued.
Ah, Parminska! How good to see you!
He reached us in three long strides and scooped Mistress Parmina up in his arms, swinging her around. This was a difficult feat, but the men and women around us simply ducked out of the way. I didn't know if I was allowed to drop the Asha's train, but decided at the last minute not to. When the man snatched the old woman up, he nearly jerked my arms off its sockets.
Ah, what should I do for you? I see you wear my most elaborate of hua today. Do you wish another? More Dragotsenosti for you? More gold?
I feared Mistress Parmina would slap him, and was shocked when she threw her head back and laughed.
Put me down, you large buffoon! I have not come here to add to my collection, my Mileya. I have come to help this wretchling start hers.
The man she called Rahim set her down, his attention now riveted on me.
Ah, is this your new Jenik? Is she the little novice I have heard so much about, raising the corpses and causing damage to the falling leaf? Ah!
He clucked his tongue, a strangely matronly sound coming from someone who looked anything but.
But she is strong, yeah. I can tell that much. As dark as an Asha can be. You will be my latest challenge, little Luchenik. And your mother Parminska will thank me for performing yet another miracle on the Valerian. Agatha! Bavel!
A boy and girl disengaged themselves from the rest of the people bustling about and hurried forward. The girl held a piece of parchment and a small quill, while the boy moved toward me, holding a curled piece of measuring tape.
You will stay there and not move for the better part of an hour until I am done with you,
Rahim instructed me.
Stretch out your arms on either side of your body. Like so.
I obeyed dumbly. I thought I was on my way to be punished. Not to be measured for... For what? Mistress Parmina? I asked weakly.
Silence, girl!
The old woman kicked away a pile of doublets on a chair and settled herself comfortably on it. On cue, two more assistants appeared beside her. One carried an elegant crystal goblet with wine, and the other a footstool and a pile of cushions. The old Asha lifted her feet, and the girl slid the footstool underneath them with practiced skill. Fox quietly retreated from the whirlwind of activity that was starting up around me, moving instead toward one of the tables laden with rough sketches of motifs and patterns.
You will only speak when spoken to. Do you understand me?
She gave no indication that she was going to explain any further, so I said nothing, only listened in a kind of daze while Rahim continued his one-sided conversation. He prowled around me, eyeing me the way a tiger might eye a young deer, while Agatha took furious notes, and Pavel measured me from all angles with his tape.
There is some promise in you, little Luchenik. Skin between beige and barley. Midnight eyes. Gold for accents only, then. But you wrap yourself around as much silver as you want and still shine. Pavel, under her arms and 3 inches below her bust.
The measuring tape dipped down to comply.
34 to you, Mav. 2¾. How do you like this Sherwani, little girl?
Excuse me? I was losing track of when he was talking to me, to his assistants, or to himself.
I said, how do you like this Sherwani?
Rahim tapped at the long coat he wore.
Popular for the men in Keon, but not for the men in Trezea. Agatha, take note. 18 inches down and across, 3.5 in the waist. In Drizea, the men wear fur, but not in the fashionable ways. We kill the bears, the possums, the beavers, and then we stick them on the head, like so.
He gestured.
Boring and unappealing. So I move here to Keon, where the clothes have shape and the hats do not stare back. And your mistress, she has the heart of gold and took pity on the little downtrodden boy from the cold north. I start my shop with her support, and now we flourish. We flourish very much. Rahim Marakan is now the best word in Hua.
I think the correct phrase would be the last word in Hua,
Fox murmured. Rahim frowned.
No, we are the best word. I would prefer death than being last. Agata, 14 inches, 12 on each side. Don't move, little Luchenik. I must see how big your breasts are.
I turned bright red and instinctively tried to cover myself.
No, no, Luchenik. We are all girls here.
He laughed uproariously at his own joke. And then large, burly hands enveloped my smaller ones, holding me still.
Except the handsome brother, of course. Pavel, line it up a centimeter to the right. We must accentuate her form, like so. Yes. Agata, 21, 27, 22.
Well, Rahim?
Mistress Parmina spoke up.
Very nice, Parminchka. She has a nice form, and will do very well in silks. Long legs and a high waist. Small or large, her breasts will be works of art in my gowns.
I blushed harder. No one paid me any attention.
But not the dark gold for this one. No. No oranges and peaches and brown leaves. And I shall know the day you hate me if it is the same day you let her wear all shades of pink, Parminchka. The embers are already in her skin in abundance, and she will have no need of their colors in her hue. The tasteful bright gold etchings, maybe. But mostly blues and greens and grays for this one. Do not touch that boy!
Fox, who was in the middle of reaching for one of the sketches on the work table, paused.
They're spell holders, boy! A little smudge and they can go.
Rahim's beefy hands began to raise, but then lowered again.
Well, they will be hard to remake.
I will require a dozen official hua for her, my Malaya. Two of each color you think best for her. And then half a dozen more in every kingdom style to start.
A dozen official hua? I echoed.
Rahim looked kindly down at me.
You still do not know, little Luchenik. You are to debut as an apprentice in 2 months' time, and it will not do to have no collection of your own. It will not be seeming to borrow one from another Asha, for they might believe my Parminchka thinks cheaply of you.
I stared, dumbfounded, back at Mistress Parmina.
We shall need to leave in an hour's time, Rahim Malaya. We have an appointment with Chesh.
Rahim beamed.
Excellent! She will pair her zivars nicely with my hua. Agatha, take down the blue swatches from the inner room and bring them here. Pavel, take the green and purple from Annabelle.
He spun me around like I was a wooden ballerina doll and deftly wrapped my waist around a bolt of silver cloth before I had time to react.
See there, little apprentice. You look lovely in silver.
I stared at the mirror, at my image with the beautiful and expensive fabrics wrapped around me.
I'm not going to be punished, I thought numbly. Or is being an Asha apprentice to be my punishment?
And the purple drapes nicely here.
Rahim thrust a piece of paper under my nose. It had a rough but stunning sketch of a purple and bright gold sunset overlooking a gray sea.
I had been saving this up for a special occasion, and you will be it. We will show you to the world in this 2 months from now. Isn't that lovely? Now where are my girls with the cloths? Agata! Pavel! You there! You look like you have nice muscles for carrying. Come with me!
He bustled off, dragging a confused fox off with him. I looked away from the mirror and met Mistress Parmina's steady gaze.
Yes, Tia,
she said calmly.
I could have punished you and turned you out with nothing but the clothes on your back and your tail between your legs. You have caused more chaos among the Ashaka than has been seen in my lifetime. And that is a very long time indeed. But if there is one thing I will forgive for the mess you have made, no matter how indirectly your responsibility in it lies, it is that you are the strongest Asha I have seen in recent times, and I will not have you loose on the population outside these walls, where you are likely to wreak even more havoc. You are strong in the dark. I think that is punishment enough, as you will learn in your own time. What matters now is that you must be taught as soon as possible, so that the dark will not have the better of you. Michaela is rather fond of you, and I owe her that much, at least. Do we understand each other, Tia?
You made my life difficult, I said. The old woman burst into laughter again.
If you think running errands and doing chores are difficult, child, then you are not ready to be an Asha. But for all the indignities I heaped on you, you have held your head and done what was expected of you. And after your accident, I no longer see any reason to delay.
She drained the contents of her goblet.
You must, of course, earn your keep well. You will have to pay back the costs of these Hua after you make your debut. It is the only proper thing to do.
I am going to be an Asha. I am going to be an Asha. Yes, I said weakly as Rahim and Fox returned, armed to the teeth with fabrics. The huge man looked triumphant, and Fox resigned. It's only proper.
It took me 2 days to grow accustomed to the monster that roamed outside. 2 days to be convinced that it would not come and eat me while I slept. The girl refused to answer any more questions about the beast's purpose, in between tales about her hints of war. I tossed and turned in my sleep. Every time I dreamed, I saw the blue moon looking down on me, blinding me with its brightness, and I woke up sweating. "You're aware of the circumstances of my exile," she said to me, while the Deva dozed outside, unaffected by the hot sun baking down overhead. "You wouldn't have sought me out otherwise." "I know that they accused you of conspiracy and of treason. They accused me of many things, of killing a king and an Asha, of being one of the faceless, of betraying the kingdoms. But I am only guilty of one of those. But was it wrong for them to believe you capable of these things?" "That is not quite true. I am more than capable." She smiled wryly. "But the last time I tried to explain myself, I was cast out and banished from my troubles. I will let them sort out what I did and did not do when this is all over. My work is not yet complete." She showed me her collection of tiny bottles, all glass and different colors. It was a curious luxury, given her surroundings, but she disagreed. "This is our beauty secret," she laughed, and picked up a small vial that held a red liquid. She pressed the tip of her finger against the opening and upended the bottle, so that the liquid inside coated the skin but prevented more from spilling out. She dabbed her finger against the sides of her neck. I caught a whiff of jasmine and flowers. "These are my potions," she explained, selecting another bottle that contained a thick, yellow concoction. "The cheapest of these spells are sold in the market commons all around the world. The more expensive spells are those that cater to each specific individual, made to draw out their strengths and hide their weaknesses. I have a blunt personality. more likely to say what I mean instead of sparing someone's feelings. This will not temper my words, but it will help those who listen to me accept them with lesser offense. Of course, if one is strong in the magic themselves, this may not work on them. Or one might wear another spell that cancels out this magic. You cannot put on too many of the stronger spells all at once, for they muddle together and make themselves ineffective. Choosing which spells to wear is like playing a game, except you are forced to decide your moves without knowing what your opponent might bring to the fight. She selected a color stick next, and gently daubed her cheekbones with it. "This is more for me than for show," she admitted to me. "It keeps my strength up." The rest she left on the table, and she drew the divider back to hide them once more from view. "I don't wear them as much as I used to. Nowadays it's easier to face people as myself, instead of looking through a mask." She looked around and added wryly, "Though the amount of visitors in the 3 months I have been here leaves something to be desired." She turned back to me, and the changes became apparent. She looked softer somehow, more graceful as she stood. Her dainty feet moved over the uneven ground, and she lifted the hem of her dress to step over the threshold that separated the cave from the rest of the sandy shore. The stained, muddied fabric only further highlighted to me the difference between who she once was and the sympathetic state she was now in. She walked with her head bowed, and I admired the way she carried herself. Even in exile, she remained dignified. It didn't feel right for her to be here, forced to take up house in a nameless cave on a sea of skulls bordering on the edge of the world. It didn't feel right that she be forced to live on this lonely beach like a nomad. It didn't feel right to see her so sad, and it angered me that so many misunderstood. The Tarvi approached to lick at her hand, and a fog cleared from my mind. The rush of affinity I felt for her diminished. My sympathy remained, but it was no longer racked by the growing, passionate force that seized me when she first rose from her vanity table. "That's been another problem with these spells," she said. "A Tarvi diminishes magic the way its Bezor does, and only the dark runes are most effective on it. That is why most rely on dark Asha to put it back into the ground." I stared at her. She only shrugged. "You knew. Still you were affected by the charms I wear. Now imagine the subtlety it can wreak on an unsuspecting world."
12. The Dawnseed Apotheca had the most peculiar fragrance, smelling like everything and nothing at once. Scents of orange and thyme and sandalwood, warred with durian and dried herring and coal, fighting for supremacy. Dried herbs were stacked on the shelves, and clumps of plants grew in pots overhead, foliage spilling down the walls. Its proprietress, a middle-aged woman named Salika who still managed to look youthful, scrutinized the list of items Rahim had written out, bustled off, and soon came hustling back with a basket full of oddly shaped glass vials and containers. They all held liquids of varying colors. Behind her, an assistant stirred a large cauldron bubbling over a clay oven. It was filled with something too thick to be water.
"Here, Lady Tia, tell me what you think of this." I bent my head to take a cautious sniff of one of the bottles Salika offered me, but I could barely get a whiff of the scent before the woman yanked it back, stoppering the lid.
"No, this might be better for you."
I leaned forward again, but all too quickly, she had rescinded the offer, picking up yet another vial.
"I think this one would be more to your liking."
This time, she held it long enough for me to inhale a heady scent of strawberries and rosemary. This bottle she set down on an empty tray while she found another. For the next hour,
I did nothing but take in smell after smell, and we went through almost 100 bottles in this manner before the apothecary was satisfied. Of these potions, she set aside only 23 on the side tray.
"She is a mix of both water and metal and a faint touch of fire," she told Mistress Parmina. "Determined and highly intelligent. This is good. She will strive for perfection, and she has a strong sense of righteousness. She accepts change quicker than others might, but she will always be questioning herself and her abilities, no matter how far her training takes her. That is not necessarily a good thing."
I didn't know how she could say that much about me by shoving vials under my nose, but because I was highly intelligent, I knew enough to keep my mouth shut.
"She must look after her lungs and her stomach, for she is weaker to poisons taken through the air. I will prescribe her ginger root tea, taken every morning for as long as she is able to. She will not require any further modifications when it comes to the lesser spells, but she will need some extensive changes for several of the stronger ones to take hold. It will take some time to make, and may be expensive."
I was expecting Mistress Parmina to grow angry over this new expense, but she looked pleased.
"Which ones?" "The strengthening spells, for one thing. Commonplace magic will have little effect on her. She will get the usual headaches, but she shall see through them easily enough."
She moved across the room, and the jars she selected this time were tinier in size, holding no more than a few ounces of liquid, or several grams of powder in each. Finally, she stepped toward the boiling cauldron.
"Dusk mushrooms," she pronounced,
tapping a few of the contents of one vial into the bubbling liquid.
"Quick root,"
she said, sprinkling bits of a green substance into the water.
"Eye tails,"
she said next, and I cringed at the name. But my fears were unfounded. She added two pieces of pale petals into the mix and watched as they sank to the bottom.
"And finally,"
Salika reached into an ornate-looking jar and slowly took out a small gray pebble. I thought for a moment it was an ant of some sort, because I could have sworn it wiggled between her two fingers. But the woman added it into the cauldron, and it dissolved the instant it hit the hot surface.
"Yes,"
she said.
"It is part of the bezoar of the tarvi that Lady Michaela very kindly offered for my collection. It is not a requirement for the potions, but it is an extremely potent addition that will greatly enhance her skills."
But why? I wasn't sure I wanted one of the Deva anywhere on my person.
"Bezoars help to enhance a dark Asha's magic, Lady Tia. You're quite lucky. None of the other apothecaries have had bezoars in such a long time. Kings claim the right to take the bezoars of Deva whose graves fall within their kingdoms."
"King Telamane is a good man,"
Mistress Parmina said.
"This is an honor, Lady Salika. No one has taken a bezoar in their potion since a Nangate was presented to my predecessor, Samika."
"Because of Lady Michaela's generosity, I add this free of charge for you. But I cannot say the same for the other ingredients, which, though a little easier to come by, are nonetheless costly."
"Well,"
Mistress Parmina leaned forward, her green eyes sparkling.
"Why don't we talk about that?"
I sidled closer to Fox while the two women quibbled over price. My brother was inspecting the cauldron, which had turned a bubbling brown after Salika had added the last ingredient.
"What's a Nangate?"
I whispered.
"It's another Deva. I'm told that it's got a tongue as long as a street."
He turned to look more closely at me.
"Are you all right, Tia?"
"I am now." I looked back at the two women. I could not stop my lower lip from trembling. "Fox, they say I'm to be an Asha."
"I would say that much was obvious, Tia. Isn't that what you wanted?"
"But I don't understand. I caused a lot of grief and damage to the tea house and to many parts of the city. That's what Lady Michaela told me, because I hadn't been allowed outside the Valerian until today. Why would they do this?"
"Think about it, Tia. Given the power you've displayed, I would think turning you out with all this magic at your command is the last thing they would want to do.
Fox's expression softened.
Just say the word, Tia. I'll throw a few bottles through the displays to distract them, and we can make for the forest outside the city.
No! Leaving was the last thing I wanted to do. I recalled the strength surging through me when I had summoned the rats, the panic I had caused. What would happen to me if I left Keon untrained? How many more people would I inadvertently harm? Leaving now would be the most irresponsible thing I could do, and it would justify the hatred people had for bone witches. But talk of the Tauravi and the Nongate had stirred up another memory. I don't think this is only about me. I think there's something wrong with Lady Michaela.
About her heart's glass?
Not just about that. I overheard a conversation between her and Mistress Parmina not too long ago. I tried to swallow the lump I could feel lodged in my throat. Fox, I think she might be dying. Behind us, the two women chortled their agreement and finalized their deal with a lengthy handshake. The Zavar shop was less chaotic than Rahim's atelier workshop, but was almost every bit as colorful. Long traditional hairpins were mounted on different stands as we entered, decorated in every kind of motif imaginable. There were paper crepe flowers, silk paper fashioned to represent seasonal scenes, lacquered combs, and fan-shaped metal streamers. I saw a few simple designs, such as a long silver stick unadorned save for a small ceramic rose at the end of its chain, and extremely elaborate works of art, such as a tortoiseshell comb depicting a long bouquet of paper goldfish and silk flowers woven along its length. So large and cumbersome that I wondered how anyone could walk around balancing such a heavy display on their heads. The store proprietress was a sunny-faced young woman named Chesh, who talked a mile a minute as we browsed, and never once came up for air that I could tell. She knew the details of every pin and comb in her store, and had admitted to crafting most.
People want what everyone has nowadays.
Chesh wore 8 or 9 of her own pins in her hair. Jewels and flowers dangled down on either side of her face, before her ears. She shook her head, and the bright jewels swung back and forth as a counterpoint. 15 boys and girls worked for her, but unlike Rahim's workshop, hers was neater, with lesser suggestions of constant chaos.
Last year, everyone wanted rubies carved in the shape of twin hearts offset by white clovers. The year before that, it was yellow lilies and green jade, mounted in white streamers. Only a few weeks ago, we were inundated with people asking for pink jasmines and silk rabbits on emerald-studded leaves, just because they saw Princess Inessa wearing them at a dance.
She wrinkled her nose.
Don't they understand that the point is to cater to your personality and not others you see wearing Zavar?
I couldn't say that I understood the point of Zavar yet either, so I just nodded, still somewhat awestruck. Fox, overwhelmed by all the beauty and femininity inside, had opted to wait outside the store.
I'll help you find what kinds of Zavar appeal to your tastes, Chesh promised.
And knowing Mistress Parmina, I would be more than happy to come up with one-of-a-kind designs for you, as I have always done for the Valerian.
I will talk to Rahim and Mistress Salika with regard to the color patterns and spells Mistress Parmina has decided for you. In the meantime, please feel free to look around and tell me anything that you might find appealing.
I had already decided that there was no way I could wear some of the larger designs, out of a small fear that they would somehow dislodge themselves and tumble to the floor, taking most of my hair with them. Instead, I idled by the simpler hairpins and combs, and found that I enjoyed looking through them. Quite a few caught my eye, but I hesitated, not sure how many I could choose. I would have been satisfied with 2 or 3, but Mistress Parmina would have none of that.
Why are you concerning yourselves with these cheap trinkets?
She demanded, uncaring that Chesh was within hearing range.
Do you think people will look up to the Valerian if their Asha walk around with things in their hair that you would need a magnifying lens to see?
She was about to say more had Chesh not smoothly intervened. We have a new supply of gold combs like the ones you prefer, Mistress Parmina, and I want you to look through the collection before I put them up for display. I have made the silver silk doves you've been asking for, but there is the matter of selecting which comb to pair them with.
A new supply, you say?
Interest piqued, the old woman turned to her, and I took the opportunity to get out of the way, retreating to a display stand where I exhaled noisily.
You shouldn't bother yourself too much about her,
someone said.
We're all used to Mistress Parmina, and we don't see her all the time. You live in the same house, so why aren't you?
He was easily one of the loveliest boys I have ever met, a few years younger than I was. I knew it was a strange thing to say, but lovely suited him well. He was clad in the simple frock that all the other shop assistants wore, and he had long lashes and a gently rounded face. He also had eyes of the brightest blue, a magnificent compliment to his tanned skin. He bowed low, and his heart's glass spilled out over his shirt. The boy looked younger than I was, but Lady Michaela had said that those who worked in the Willows were allowed to receive their heart's glass earlier if they wanted. His was a rich red color, but there was something strange to it, something I couldn't quite place at the moment. The boy slipped his heart's glass back inside his robe, then held a silver hairpin out to me. It was shaped like a wing, with blue sapphires embedded along intervals on its metal feathers. It reminded me of the sapphire pin I had to sacrifice to the Oracle when I first arrived at Onkyo. It's beautiful, I gasped. But how did you know? The boy shrugged shyly. He had long hair tied neatly back into a small ponytail, and he tugged at its end.
I just thought it suited you.
I love it, I told him, smiling. My name's Tia.
Mine's Lick.
Well, Lick, thank you. You're really good at this. Instead of beaming back, the boy looked a little sad.
That's what Chesh says, too. Do you want me to help you pick out some more pins? I know a few other things that you might like.
That would be good because I don't even know what I like yet. He grinned.
This place seems intimidating, especially if you're new to Zivar. The whole of the Willows seems intimidating, really. The trick is to remember that we're all here to make you look prettier. So it can't be that bad a thing.
We laughed, and he led me to a few more display stands. I spent most of the day happily occupied, and found enough items to sate even Mistress Parmina's need to show me off. She settled the bill. Chesh promised to deliver them to the Valerian as soon as she finished them, and Lick waved at us as we left.
This is enough for one day,
Mistress Parmina announced. I expected us to return to the Valerian. We didn't, and I started to break out into a fresh sweat when I realized where she was taking us. The falling leaf had seen better days. The garden had escaped mostly unscathed, save for a few disturbances in the soil. But the roof above the room Zoya and the other Asha had entertained Prince Kantz and his friends had collapsed, and the door leading in had been ripped out. Some attempt had been made to clean the area, but I could still see bits of broken wood and debris. The smell of sawdust clung to the air. Though it was the only room that looked to have been severely damaged by my mishap, there was a small sign by the entranceway announcing that, while the falling leaf would be closed until repairs were finished, visitors were still free to come and enjoy their gardens. I was horrified. Had I done all that? How had the rest of Onkyo looked? I knew who the owner of the tea room was. A short and stocky woman of middling age was supervising some of the cleaning, and was deep in conversation with a few men whom I assumed were carpenters come to assess the damage. I understood immediately what Mistress Parmina wanted me to do. I hurried forward, my cheeks scarlet and my hands trembling, and stood before the woman, waiting for her to acknowledge me. Once she did, I knelt forward and bowed until my forehead lay pressed against the earthen floor. I had once seen an apprentice do this to a mistress from a neighboring Ashika for carelessly ruining one of her expensive hua. She had remained in that position for the better part of the afternoon, out in the street for all to see, until the mistress had determined she had been humiliated long enough
Oh, you don't need to do that, the Falling Leaf's mistress exclaimed when she saw me. Oddly enough, it was she who was embarrassed.
It was an accident. It couldn't be helped, I'm sure.
Nevertheless, Mistress Parmina said, my apprentice was somewhere she was not supposed to be, and your Chahana suffered as a result. House Valerian pledges to pay for any damages made during her visit.
That is very kind of you, Lady Parmina, the woman said. But House Imperial has already offered the same thing.
I understand that Zoya had an important role in all of this and must share the blame. But, the old woman added firmly, as my apprentice was guilty of at least the physical consequences of this incident, I insist we assume the financial responsibility. And because you receive no profit while the Falling Leaf remains closed, please also accept a small daily stipend from us as well, until you are ready to reopen.
The tea house owner paused and finally nodded, if a little nervously.
I hope Mistress Hestia will understand.
Mistress Hestia shall, Mistress Parmina assured her. I will personally inform her of my decision.
The other woman seemed to wilt in relief.
Thank you for your kind generosity, mistress.
Get up, Tia,
Mistress Parmina told me, and I scrambled to my feet.
We will take our leave, Mistress Peg, and thank you for your clemency.
Wait. If I was to beg forgiveness from the Chahana mistress, I may as well ask forgiveness from everyone. I would like to apologize to the girl who brought me to the Falling Leaf that night.
A girl?
The woman looked astounded.
I sent no girls out that night.
But one came to the Ashika and asked me to bring Lady Shadi's Hua and her instrument.
Oh, my girls bring such matters to my attention before I send them out. I do not remember any of them doing so that night.
My charge must have been mistaken,
Mistress Parmina said smoothly.
Thank you again for your consideration, mistress.
Confused, I bowed low again before we departed, keeping my eyes glued to the floor until we had put the Falling Leaf some distance behind us. Before we entered the Valerian, Fox squeezed my hand reassuringly.
I will be nearby,
he promised, slipping away before Mistress Parmina could command him to leave. The old Asha had other things planned.
You will begin your lessons tomorrow. Lady Shadi and I will accompany you to your classes. In the meantime, I find it insulting how gracelessly you stood after Mistress Peg accepted your apology. That is not the way Asha should stand. And fortunately, she was aware of your situation and did not take offense. But tonight, you will practice until I am satisfied with your performance. Kneel as you did in the tea room.
I hurried to comply, pressing my forehead against the soft bamboo mats that covered the floor of her room.
Too slapdash! Too quick! It looks as if you want it to be over. Do it again!
She made me practice this throughout the night, always finding fault with the way I moved. By the time I returned to my bed, it was night and the candles had burned low, and I was exhausted. I reached out to Fox's reassuring presence in my mind, finding comfort there. I felt him respond, and with it the faintest of images. Fox's hands clenched into fists, bandaged but not from injury. There was another man in front of him, hands also raised, with a shock of red hair and a tattoo on his neck shaped like a bird. And then the image disappeared. Cautious, I prodded at his presence in my head. After a moment's pause, I felt his thoughts drift back to mine.
Go to sleep, Tia.
Easy for you to say, I thought grouchily just before I drifted off. If today was any indication of how my lessons shall fare, I might not last the week.
The dance was as old as time. They performed it every year at the Darashi Oyun, a beautiful solo that singled out the most accomplished Asha dancer of the season. the most distinguished award she could be presented with. Winning the role could have dramatic effects on an Asha's success. They performed it on rare occasions in Dricht, in the cool summer palaces of King Adil. They performed it in the Yadosha city-states, where men in loud voices and women with tobacco in hand paid exorbitant prices to watch them on stage, like these dancers were exotic species of a human menagerie. They even performed it in cold Estera, where the muffled cloaks and fur did nothing to hide the sway of bodies and grace of form. But here, before the lonely grave, the girl performed the ritual of the dancing wind, and the waves jumped around her and applauded. The Tauravi moved on instinct, circling as the girl did, leaping and bowing, so that it rose when she rose and fell as she did, and with them the world spun. The dance wound down, drew to a close. The girl's eyes were a mystery. The Tauravi drew closer and licked her face like a faithful dog might greet its owner, and her laughter echoed across the waters, a sound of joy.
13. Despite my exhaustion, I woke up early the next day out of habit, while everyone else in the Valerian still slept. Careful not to wake the sleeping maids, I tiptoed out into the Ashika's entrance armed with my broom, prepared to do my morning chores. Fox was waiting as usual, leaning against the wooden stand that displayed the Ashika's name and crest. "Who were you fighting with last night?" I asked as I began sweeping the sidewalks.
"Fighting?"
"I saw you. You were with some guy with a bird tattoo."
"Oh, him."
He dismissed my question with a wave of his hand.
"I've only just realized my army training in Odalia was woefully inept, so I've been asking some of the soldiers for some tips on fighting. That's how I learned that something's been happening at the palace."
"Isn't there always something happening at the palace?"
"There's an army of death seekers preparing to leave the city."
I stopped. Like the Asha, Ankyo was the death seekers' main headquarters, and most served the Kion Empress. "What? But why?"
"I'm not sure."
For once, Fox's uncanny ability to know the city gossip had failed him.
"I think it has something to do with the Sovel. The Dark Asha in charge of raising it died some time ago, but no one knew about her death until after mine."
"Yes, her name was Suckmeat, I think." I still wasn't used to Fox treating his demise so casually. "I hope they find it before you do. That is not something you should be holding a grudge against."
"Can't hurt to try. I've acquired certain advantages since then."
"I don't know much about Death Seekers. I've only met one so far, and he didn't have much to say."
"They do pretty much what Asha do, except they're not as pretty to look at. And I don't think they dance very well. Little boys are taken away to be trained as soon as their heart's glass change color. Not the best childhood to have, but as a fighting force, they're pretty effective. I intend to find out more about where they're going, or if they have an inkling of where the Sovel is hiding."
"Fox, please don't tell me you're planning on infiltrating the palace just to assuage a curiosity."
"Okay."
My brother shot me a grin, gently nudging the broom out from my grasp.
"I won't tell you then."
"I'm serious. You could get in trouble." I scooped out some water from a small metal bucket on the side of the gate, dousing the walkway with its contents. He stepped out of my way, limping a bit, and continued to sweep. "I'm already in trouble, so I think I've made the quota for us for this year alone."
"It doesn't look like you're in trouble right now. Has the old lady been punishing you again?"
"Unless you count buying up half the stores in the district for my upcoming wardrobe as punishment."
"They're afraid of you, you know."
"Me?"
"What you did at the Falling Leaf wasn't something any other Asha could do. The mistress of the Imperial was in an ugly mood yesterday. She wanted to pay for the Falling Leaf's damages. She was livid when Parmina convinced the tea room lady otherwise.
And how do you know all this? I asked. Suspicious.
The Imperial's maids like to talk.
He shrugged.
Two of them were at the sweet shop, trying to stay out of their mistress's way. I'm not entirely sure why those old women were vying to pay for repairs, though. Most people would do the opposite.
It's less about feeling sorry for the Falling Leaf's proprietress and more about showing off. I dunked a rough sponge into the bucket, scrubbed at the white walls with it. It's about power, and how much influence you can sway on behalf of your house. The one waving the most money around commands the greater amount of respect. More importantly, people get to see how influential they are.
Looks like you did learn something from your time here after all.
Fox leaned the broom against the now clean wall and found another sponge.
Are you certain you want to step into this kind of world? I don't think the cutthroatedness of this business is good for you.
I'm already in it too deep for me to get out. When I raised those rats and those... I hesitated. Not sure if calling them corpses would be respectful or appropriate. Then forged on anyway. Corpses. It was both terrifying and exhilarating all at once. I was scared stiff. I felt like a part of me was being swept away. And I didn't know how to get that back. But it also felt good. This time, Fox stopped, looking at me.
It felt good?
I nodded. Every time I draw in the dark, it feels like I could keep drawing on it forever. Lady Michaela promised to help me keep it under control. And it's in Mistress Parmina's best interests to protect me, no matter how much more she puts me in debt. Fox no longer drew in breath to sigh, but the noise he did make sounded empty, troubled.
I'll stand by whatever you think is best, but don't expect this conversation to be over. I still think there's another way.
Tia!
Mistress Parmina's shrill voice scared a flock of doves into flight.
Where are you? What are you doing outside? Scrubbing the walls! What would an Asha apprentice be doing with the chores of the hired help? Come in at once and take your breakfast. Your first lesson starts in an hour. Do not keep Shadi waiting. No, no, your brother can stay and do the chores until Kana comes. I have no need of him. Rahim has brought over some apprentice robes for you. Get out of those cheap tunics before the rest of the world sees you in such rags.
Become an Asha if you must,
Fox whispered to me, voice tinged with amusement.
And should you ever get to run the Valerian, promise me you won't inherit that screeching voice and prune face.
The robe laid out for me to wear the day I began my apprenticeship was of light chartreuse. It was nothing like the Asha's Hua collection, but it was still a cut above most of what I'd seen novices wear. It was a soft green, attractive to the eyes, and an ivory waist wrap smaller than what Asha wear, only a third of its size, so that it served more like a belt than as a form-fitting adornment. I was also given a small silk bag that contained a plain folding fan, a headscarf, and several pieces of sweetmeat and bread wrapped in fine paper to eat between lessons. I was used to dressing hurriedly, and was already done half an hour before the others came down. Lady Shadi arrived first, in a very becoming beige and olive green hue that highlighted her eyes. She smiled at me.
You're early. That's a very good skill to have for your training.
Thank you, Lady Shadi. The beautiful Asha still made me nervous, even after all these months. We never had the opportunity to talk to each other before, and it felt strange to realize there were two kinds of worlds in the Ashaka. In one of those worlds, Asha ruled with their odd secrets and curious customs. The other was the more mundane, everyday world occupied by everyone else, where maids cleaned and cooked and scrubbed and ran errands, but still thought and functioned in the same way most people in the city did. And I was leaving this second world that I was more comfortable with in order to join the first, which I still knew very little about. A word of warning about Mother.
She can be a miser when it comes to money. And she has a lot of bad habits, as I'm sure you know. But she will always work for the best of the Valerian. Which means she will work to make you popular. And after what happened at the Falling Leaf, we all have very high hopes for you. Don't let her intimidate you. And be confident. We will be visiting many people today for your first lessons. Bow when we do. As low as you can, for you are the junior of everyone we will meet. And stay quiet unless you are spoken to. Do you understand?
I nodded. Mistress Parmina bustled in, looking hideously regal in red and gold.
What are you two dawdling for? Come, we are wasting time, and Lady Yasmin is expecting us.
Fox, as usual, brought up the rear. And once again, Mistress Parmina neither forbade nor acknowledged his presence. Unless they had a pressing engagement, few Asha were out at this time of day, so we only encountered servants rushing out on errands and other apprentices hurrying for their lessons. Just as before, many stopped to pay their respects first to Mistress Parmina and then to Lady Shadi, and then rushed ahead. It took us several minutes of walking to reach the studio of my first instructor, a smaller bungalow carefully hidden behind a large tower of trees growing at the entrance of the lane. With Fox resuming guard outside, we were ushered into a small, cozy-looking room. I was surprised by the age of the instructor who rose to her feet to greet us. Lady Yasmin was as tall, as slim, and as pretty as my sister Daisy. But the similarities ended there. Instructor Yasmin's green eyes were fringed by long, dark lashes, with freckles scattered along the bridge of her nose. She was dressed in long, flowing robes dyed a soft lavender, and her reddish-gold hair was tied back in a loose ponytail that reached her thighs. This was the first time I had ever seen Mistress Parmina bow to anyone.
Lady Yasmin,
the old Asha said formally.
I am pleased to introduce a new jewel from House Valerian. Please instruct her to the best of her abilities. And we ask that you take extraordinary care of her, that she may flourish under your tutelage.
Lady Yasmin returned her bow.
I am honored, Mistress Parmina. Shall we retire to the inner chamber, Miss Tia?
I was glad that Mistress Parmina wouldn't be on hand to witness my first lesson. The last thing I wanted was her scrutinizing every mistake I made.
Let us begin, Tia.
Mistress Yasmin raised her hand above her head and extended her right leg out so that only the tips of her toes touched the floor.
Do as I do. Good. Keeping your leg straight and without lifting it off the ground, move it in a half circle away from you, and end by touching it to your left heel. Extend your left leg this time, and do the same, brushing your toe against your right heel. Now for your arms. Raise both over your head and keep them steady. Every time you move your leg, bring the arm on the same side down, and extend it as far away as you can until it runs a straight line from your shoulder. Now left heel and left arm. Right heel and right arm. Repeat.
And just like that, my dancing lessons began.
She has potential,
Lady Yasmin said an hour later, after we returned from the inner chamber. Lady Shadi and Mistress Parmina had been waiting for us the whole time I had my first lesson, enjoying tea and scones served to them by Lady Yasmin's assistants.
She takes to instructions well and has an ear for music. With time, she can be more than adequate.
This seemed to be what Mistress Parmina wanted to hear. She rose, and we bowed again.
We are delighted,
the old Asha said,
that you have accepted her as your student.
The next studio we visited was similar in size, with different musical instruments framed against the walls, some weathered with age. My instructor was a dark-skinned woman named Teti, but Mistress Parmina gave the same speech. I bowed just as I was told to, and Lady Teti brought me to another inner chamber as Lady Yasmin had. Once we were settled in, she handed me a wooden setar, and my face burned.
It was a reminder of the trouble Zoya had put me in. First, I will teach you how to position your fingers over the struts, and the different techniques you can use to strum at the strings. Hold the neck of the setar loosely in the palm of your right hand, letting your fingers hover above the strings. Settle the base of the setar on your lap, with your other hand cradling its underside. Like this. That is good. But why is your hand trembling? Don't be nervous, Tia.
I couldn't help it. I tried to stop my tremors, but although I managed to place my fingers the way she had instructed, the setar in my hands quivered.
We practiced for close to an hour, and she gave me more instruments to practice on. A pair of drums with treated sheepskin stretched over their surfaces. A thin reed-like cylinder with seven holes carved into its body and a mouthpiece on one end. And an unusually shaped bow made of wood that produced a range of powerful sounds when scratched. I found my rhythm easily on the first, could produce no sound at all on the second, and could only manage scraping noises on the third. Finally, I managed one long note on the setar, the closest thing that sounded like music that I could manage.
It will get easier with a little more time and practice, of course,
Lady Tetti promised me.
But you already learn quickly.
That's good. She said as much to Mistress Parmina when we returned.
She is doing well on the setar. I believe she will have a similar aptitude for the sarud, though I do not think she will fare well with the mei. I will help her find her footing and see which will appeal to her most.
Mistress Parmina looked pleased again. We visited four more small studios that day. One for singing, one for general instruction, mostly about history and politics, one for meditation, and one for flower arrangement and etiquette. The fifth place I was brought to was bigger than the others. It consisted only of a large hall as big as three or four chahana put together, and loosely sectioned off by thin dividers to shield some areas from view. Yells and shouts of pain came through some of these partitions, alongside heavy thumps, as if something had hit a hard object at great speed. Asha and Asha apprentices milled about, but they were all dressed in long, plain white robes and breeches. The instructor here was a Lady Hami. She was petite and slim, only an inch or two taller than I was then, and with her hair in multiple braids like Asha Brahit. Mistress Parmina gave the same instructions, and then took several steps back. So did Lady Shadi. I was unaware of the reasons why and was wondering if I should follow their lead, until I was literally knocked off my feet. The floor was lined with thick bamboo mats that cushioned most of my fall, but that didn't stop it from knocking the wind out of me. I lay there for a few seconds, stunned. Lady Hami took the opportunity to drag me back to my feet. She lifted her hand, and I was down on the floor again, though she never touched me. It felt like a great gust of wind had picked me up and slammed me onto the ground.
You are a dark Asha, aren't you?
She circled around me, while I gasped for breath.
That means you will never be able to command the runes we can. Fire, water, earth, forest, metal, wind. Unfortunately, that doesn't matter. Get up.
I struggled to my feet, my dress greatly restricting my movements, and was knocked down again for my efforts.
You will be taught to defend yourself. You will be taught to fight back. That you start off at a disadvantage does not excuse you from losing. Get up.
It took me longer this time, but another push of air sent me on my back while I was still on my knees.
This will not be like your other lessons, where you are taught finery and flowers. Get up. You will be taught to hone your body like a weapon, to understand the strengths and weaknesses of each rune so that you can learn to counter its effects. Get up. Understandably, it will be difficult for one who cannot harness their use, but that does not make you completely vulnerable. Get up. The dark rune has its own advantages, but it will take work on your part to master. Get up. I will reassess your progress in 2 months and determine whether or not I will continue with you as a student or send you away. Not every Asha can do this,
and I will not waste my time with those who cannot cope with the demands of the training. I told you to get up, novice!
I scrambled up, heart pounding, and followed.